You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to the weekend edition of the Undisputed Podcast. I'm your host, Jenny Taft. Today's podcast features all the best segments from this week's slate of Undisputed. With in-depth interviews and discussions, we have a lot to talk about heading into next week. Skip, Shannon, let's get to it.
Welcome back to Undisputed. Fox Sports NBA analyst Steven Jackson is joining us now from Minneapolis. Steven, you were extremely close with George Floyd. You have been incredibly strong throughout all of this. For George's family, just your strength in doing all these interviews and being on the ground in Minneapolis. Just want to check in about your emotions today ahead of the memorial service in Minneapolis.
All over the place. At the end of the day, I'm thinking more about Gigi, Roxy, and his family. That's what most of my heart is that thinking about them. It's going to be a tough for a couple of days for them, and I'm just trying to be strong for them. I'm standing for the family. I'm standing for Gigi and Roxy, and I got to be strong for them. I really don't even care about how I feel. I'm concerned about how I feel. I'm just trying to be strong for them.
Stacks, you've been in Minnesota basically the last 10 days, and so how is the mood? What's the tone like in Minnesota yesterday, today, compared to what it was over the last 3 to 4 days?
Well, you still can feel the rage in the city, Shannon. You still can feel the rage in the city. And the city is not just happy with those guys getting arrested. This city has the same hurt and the same passion as the family has. And one thing I got to say every time I get on TV, I got a lot of love for Minnesota, man, because they really trying to fight for what's right here. And I'm right in the fight with them. And I appreciate everything they've done in Minnesota, but the fire still lit here. We haven't put the fire out here. We're going to keep going until we get justice.
So, Steven, how did the family and those close to it feel about the upgraded charge to second-degree murder against Derek Chauvin and then the arrests and the aiding and abetting charges against the other three policemen?
It's a step in the right direction, but, you know, at the end of the day, Skip, you already know we want convictions. We want guys in jail. We want guys to be in jail and treated the same way that we treat one of us. And it's plain and simple, Skip. It ain't rocket science. We just want to be fair. We want them to treat them just as they'll treat any other black man for murder. And that's just the tale of it, Skip. It's not hard at all.
Stacks, as Jenny alluded to earlier, you were very close to George. Do you think George ever thought that he would be the rallying cry? He might be the watershed moment that would get change, would bring about change in America?
Nah, I know he wouldn't have thought that. Trust me, if he had a chance to fight for change and stand for change, he definitely would. I've been with his brother Milton, they call him Popo. I've been with him every day, and he said, Floyd, you can tell him all the time. One day, George, you're going to get us at the top. One day, George, you're going to get us at the top. If we never know to be this way, but his whole family's life is going to change. His daughter's life is going to change from going from this. And he changed the world, like Gigi said. So he wouldn't have predicted this, but he definitely would have wanted it.
So, Steven, I don't want to make too much of this, but you have talked about how you and George were like twins, quote unquote twins, because you look so much alike. As Shannon just mentioned, you've been there now since basically the start for 10 days. Do you feel like you've almost had to sort of stand in for George, like to become part of George for the family's sake, for the daughter's sake, for everybody's sake, just that, that you're there now as the twin brother?
Well, I think this whole situation would have been different, Skip, if I would have stepped up, got in front of the media, got ahead of this thing when it's happened to my brother. I don't think it would have got the attention it got. You know, I don't think the world would have got behind it like they got behind it. It's a lot of people that love me still, and it's a lot of people that know I love everybody. And I think it's more people that love everybody than more people that hate. And every once in a while, Skip, God brings somebody around to save this place called America, because God getting upset. And if we don't get these things right, he's going to come take us away. So I think he's sent me to try to get things right, because I love everybody. And I hopefully people are following.
Stacks, when you look at the protest that's growing around in America, and I thought when we talked, Skip and I had this conversation on Monday, I thought the temperature was going to come down, the protests would start to dissipate, but they're growing in size. If you look at what's going on in New York, you look at what's going on in L.A., in San Francisco, in some of these other communities, yes, there's no more, I don't see the rioting and the looting that was going on, but the volume of people that are coming out and saying justice for Jordan, no justice, no peace, the people that are getting arrested showing their support and says, we sincerely won't change in America. Did you anticipate that it would grow this big and would be able to sustain itself for this long?
Not at all. No, I couldn't have predicted this, Shannon, but I understand it. I understand why. There's so many cases where we never got justice. There's so many people hurting. There's so many people that stand on the side of right. There's so many people that stand on the side of love. And I think that's what's showing people are tired. Everybody around the world that loves everybody came together, and this is the first time, Shannon, that all 50 states protested at the same time. This is the first time. So this should say something. People just have to open their eyes. Everybody's saying the same thing. We want justice. Everybody's saying we want everybody to be treated fairly. So we just have to listen. And if the president's not going to stand up and lead, hell, I'll take the lead.
So, Stephen, help us out here. Have you heard anything about Derek Chauvin, the cop who I think murdered, obviously, George Floyd, having crossed paths with George before? Because as we now all know, Chauvin he worked security at a nightclub for about 17 years. He would sit outside in his police cruiser out in the parking lot of the nightclub. And for the last year, George Floyd worked inside security. Is it possible they had crossed paths? Is it possible they had had an incident or had any previous animosity or bad blood? Because this might come up in the trial. Have you heard anything from any of the insiders or the family about any conflict they might have had in the past?
No, I haven't, Skip. I have heard they worked at the same club, and it's kind of hard to work at the same club and not see each other, kind of not have any contact. But me knowing Floyd, just like me and his brother, Paul Milton, was talking, that video looked personal. You know, it's too many situations in that video where we know our brother and we know it looked personal, especially when they were walking, when they put him in cuffs and he was walking off and he dropped to his knees. That's the sign of, no, I don't want to go. I know what y'all going to do to me. But my brother wasn't weak like that to just drop to his knees. He knew what was going on. And I hope everything comes out, Skip. But trust me, I'm going to get more, because I'm here doing my own investigation. Because if I can help in any kind of way, that's what I'm here to do.
Well, bro, you're to be commended. And I know that, look, the thing is that your relationship that you had with George, there's no doubt in my mind, if the shoe was on the other foot, he would be right there for you and your family fighting, trying to lead a charge for change. So I commend you, Stacks. It's an unbelievable job what you've done. You should be proud. I know, not proud of the moment, but proud of how you've been able to handle this situation. And hopefully, this is the watershed moment. Hopefully, this is the thing that brings about change, that we get treated fairly, that in America, that we're American citizens and we're treated just like our counterparts. Nothing more, nothing less.
That means a lot coming from you, so thank you.
Stephen, we love you around here. Mm-hmm. We're going to be thinking about you today. Thinking about George's family, the image of Gigi on your shoulders is what I'm going to be picturing specifically today, and we just want to thank you for joining us. No mercy. Joining us now is rapper and activist Killer Mike, who told us in the commercial break we should call him Michael on TV because his mom would appreciate it. And Michael, we are so, so happy to have you. And may I just say that your words to Atlanta last week were moving and real and honest, and people were listening. And we just appreciate your time today. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate you.
Okay, Michael.
I'm honored to be here.
Since Michael says, mama said, call you by your government name, I'm going to call you by your government name, Michael. But you know how we do it when you and I talk personally.
It's killer and shite.
Mike, you got the pulse of Atlanta. You know everything that's going on in Atlanta, good, bad, and indifferent. Tell me what the pulse is in Atlanta right now dealing with these protests and the killing of George Floyd.
First, I want to give some shouts out to some organizations that are doing great work. One of them is Paw Kids. They're making sure kids stay fed and families have stuff like food, clothing, and shelter. Next Level Boys Academy, led by Gary Davis, that's making sure young black men avoid jail time, become better communicators with their families. And the New Georgia Project, who's making sure that the people that are out there protesting to the people who are in the Vidalia onion fields are making sure they're getting registered to vote. So after the protest, after the rioting, well-deserved too, after that, that these kids go on to become organizers and these young people galvanize at the elections and pass the election. So that's what's going on. I want to just say from a street perspective, man, I've been seeing everybody from the brothers that hang into the blue flame to the people who watch the Georgia gang on Sunday's political shows galvanizing together, making sure that people have their rights and are protected from harms and injustice.
When I talked to you, I called you the other day when the riots and the protests, rebellion, whatever you want to call them, Mike, broke out. I called you and asked you how you're doing. Tell the people at home what you told me when I asked you how were you.
I was sick. I was beat up. I was defeated. I was scared for y'all. I rioted in 92, so I understand and I hold no criticism of. I just know that if you're from Georgia, like Shannon and I, you know that Atlanta, places like Atlanta and Savannah and even Macon can be places where blacks can actually have opportunity. And to see that the possibility that they may, that might disappear. Well, as we on the ground, people like me, Tip, or brothers, even like if you tell the younger brothers like Lil Baby and Thug Them and investing in their communities, if we don't have the opportunity to do that and we lose Atlanta, I fear Black America has lost like one of its last strongholds. So I was defeated, man, but I got a lot of good encouragement from you and others, and I appreciate it. I didn't want to get on the podium and talk, had nothing in my positive in my mind to say. So like the old people say, I just spoke my heart, and I'm glad it resonated with people, because I think we have an opportunity in Atlanta and in Georgia to redefine race relations, to redefine what's economically fair and right, and to redefine political affiliations and what they mean and how they can be helpful to people. And we have an opportunity to unite as a worker class and make sure that our kids can grow into a middle class and also grow wealth for our families and for our community. And I think if we lose sight of that, we lose that opportunity, we've lost it all.
So, Michael, I read that your father was a policeman. Did that have any impact on you at all? As a kid?
Yeah. Yeah, when I was elementary school, your dad's a policeman, your dad's your hero. I have a very brave cousin who was a high school quarterback back who probably would have went on to play D1. He's tore his shoulder up, trained himself with a hurt shoulder to become a kicker, went to West Georgia, came out, and is on the SWAT team in Atlanta now. I have another cousin that's a commander down in East Point. So I'm from a historical standpoint, let me qualify. There once was a time where black people were not policed by black people in Atlanta. They were hurt. They were murdered. They were the police stood aside as riots happened. We got an original 8 policemen about 67 years ago. Those 8 policemen were not allowed to be armed. They were forced to dress in the YMCA because people did not want to dress with people, with black people. So we suffered a lot to have some ownership of our community. We suffered a lot to be policed by people who look like us. You know, we suffered. So I respect respectful officers like Detective Williams, the late great. I respect respectful officers like one of the highest ranking officers. I believe he was a major Ball, who lived in my community. I respect it because I understood how hard it is to be a policeman and represent government and still maintain your integrity as a black man. So I honored that. You know, so my dad and my cousins, I honored that. I could never do the job. But I'm not gonna talk down on good men, but I am gonna single out bad behavior. Rotten apples ruin whole barrels, and it is time to cut out the cancer that is Jeff Sessions called white Anglo-Saxon Protestant history. If that is the way policing is thought of in this country, then I remind everybody that policing began with slave catching.
So the George Floyd protests, are you surprised that the volume and what we're seeing? Because I remember in 92, I was in Savannah at the time, but I remember it didn't last as long as what we're seeing right now, Mike. This has gone on for 10, 11 days, and although it's more peaceful, the sides have grown, and the volatility at night has simmered down.
I heard a wise man say, his name was Skip Bayless, and Skip, when talking about the kneeling of Colin Kaepernick, said that white players were missing an opportunity to stand in solidarity with Colin and break the leverage that the NFL has over all players. But instead of seeing this as a solidarity issue and a player's issue, they were viewing it as a nationalistic issue, as a racial issue, and that solidarity never happened. So players in the NFL are never going to be treated as they deserve because that sliver of racial or political division kept them apart. I literally remember being heartbroken when that one player decided to walk through the tunnel in Pittsburgh when the team had decided to stay back. I thought it was a class act by the team, led by the coaching organization. So Skip said something genius. People magnify that out of football into America. The reason that we have a ruling class in this country is because poor people do not understand that past color and racial divisions, we are all exactly the same, but that's changing. Because those kids that are out there in the streets of different colors and ethnicities and different religions understands that we serve the same masters. The same exact corporations oppress our communities. The same exact corporations are stealing education from our children. The same exact rulers of us are making deals in closed rooms that we deserve to be in and have say in. Every police department should have an empowered citizens review board. Every city should make sure that 30% of their business class has to be small or medium-sized business. It cannot just be national and corporate chains. There are things that we can do to ensure that America remains a place of opportunity. And those kids in the streets that are doing things that they're being accused of, that they're not actually doing in some cases, those kids are the future. They understand that it's us. They understand that the proletariat must unite. And they understand that moving forward as a united tribe, regardless of what we look like, is the best solution for this country to unify.
So your response to what Drew Brees said yesterday?
My response I gave on Jalen's show on another show, and Drew is tied to the whipping post and deservedly so at this point. My response yesterday was he's an incredibly intelligent quarterback who said something incredibly stupid. But I need Americans to know that this stupidity is taught to you all. And I'm talking to, let me tell you, I'm talking to white Anglo-Saxon Protestant Americans now. You've been lied to. You've never read the Cornerstone speech. You've only heard about the War of Northern Aggression. Read what the vice president of the Confederacy said about the founding of the Confederate nation. He literally said that it is founded under the principle that whites are superior and therefore should dominate and enslave black people. That's in that speech. But you don't know that, so you're not, how can you have empathy when you haven't been educated? Drew Brees has no idea that the Jane Elliott blue-eyed, brown-eyed experiment exists. I would recommend to Drew medicine right now, because I already pulled out the belt and give you spanking, and that's when you sit down and you get told why you were spanked. I want you to go to YouTube, Drew. I want you to turn your phone off for an hour, and I want you to watch the blue and brown eye experiment by Jane Elliott. There's no way you're going to walk away from that feeling the same. I want to tell white Americans that you're being given propaganda every day because you see kneeling as disrespectful of a flag in a lot of cases, but you don't see a Budweiser commercial with flags on the booty shorts. You don't see that as disrespectful or a flag bikini. But all those things are said not to be done. We're told not to do those things. When we make a flag bucket cap, we're not supposed to do that, yet we do it. So I'd just like to encourage us to back off nationalism and remember that the human beings that are across from us are part of this tapestry that make America. And if we put a flag over human life, or if we put a flag over the way we protest human life, then we are truly disconnected from humanity, and we're going down a nationalistic road, much like fascism of Nazi Germany of old. People cared more about nationalism than they did the human beings that they were marching into death camps. We cannot care more about a flag than we care about seeing a 225-pound man place his total body weight on the neck of another man as he screams for God, his mother, and gasps for air and asphyxiates like some type of painful porn in front of us. A flag's not worth that. Any flag. If a flag does not truly represent the people giving us all our constitutional rights, then the flag is not worth it.
And that was my point earlier when Skip and I was talking. I said the flag is supposed to be a representation of the values of a country in that everybody falls up under that flag. Everybody gets treated the same. Everybody has the same opportunity. Well, if that's not the case, why do you get upset when the people that feel that they're being oppressed, that they feel they're being unheard, and do not have those rights and liberties? Why do you get upset with them if they don't get all goo-goo and gaga over the flag like you, who have been represented by that flag?
Black Americans love this country. Black Americans have worked their butt off. I don't care if the sacrifices of soldiers in the war. I don't care if the sacrifices of Tuskegee Airmen or the men who suffered from the Tuskegee experiment. One group of men flew planes on the behalf of this country and made sure this country stayed free. The other group of men suffered in the indignity of having to live with a sexually transmitted disease until they died so a government can study it. So we have to understand the sacrifices that have been made before we blindly make these sweeping statements. I just want all Americans, and especially Drew, and especially white Anglo-Saxon Protestant Americans, to watch the Blue and Brown Eye Experiment by Jane Elliott. Mm-hmm. Allow yourself to learn. Allow yourself to touch and have empathy so you can learn that you've been made to be apathetic. You don't know no better, so it's time you know better now. Mm-hmm. The same way you studied that playbook, I want you to go to YouTube, study that experiment, so you can understand truly what your teammates and the people who've helped make you a world champion go through away from the field and out of that stadium.
So where do we, Mike, from moving forward, where do we go next?
Well, I want to say that if you study the six steps of, if you study the six steps of Kingian nonviolence, the final one is resolution. So in matters of Drew Brees, in matters of, did you guys hear me? We still here?
Yeah, we got.
Yeah.
Yeah, in matters of Drew Brees, I say he should seek to truly understand, he should seek to learn, and he should seek to reconcile. In matters of this nation, there is a reconciliation that is due to the Black community. It begins with conversations about things like H.R. 40 and pushing through a comprehensive study that will give us the reparations that we deserve. It begins with how does the education system change to tell the truth to all five-year-olds so that we don't have 15-year-olds that are ignorant and that are polarizing in the high school cafeterias and gyms. It begins by saying financially, what are we going to do to make sure that this community starts to enjoy some of the benefits of having donated so much to this country in blood, sweat, and tears? And if we're not starting there, and if we're not talking about there, and if we don't have an agenda from our community that's truly respected and valued by the political parties we're voting for, then we're still where we were 100 years ago, and shamefully so.
And Michael, quickly back to your last point, you've many times brought up Jane Elliott, and for those who don't know, she was a white teacher in Iowa who, shortly yes. after the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King, conducted a little classroom experiment, the blue-eyed, brown-eyed experiment, where she separated yes. her white students to try to make the brown eyes feel like they were the minority. This is what it feels like to walk in the shoes of a black.
Well, the blue eyes yeah. felt like they were the minority. The brown eyes.
I'm sorry, majority. I got it backwards. That's yes. right. Yeah. And so, why did it move you so much the first time you saw it?
Because as black people, we get tired of being yeah. your teachers. As black people, we get tired of serving you guys. You know, just to be frank and honest, man, it's not our responsibility to get rid of racism. Like James Baldwin said, we didn't invent the word nigger. We didn't create these conditions. White society did that. And a white teacher should be your teacher. Now, we are definitely your co-conspirators, your allies, friends and brothers, depending on who you talk about. LP, my rap partner, that's my brother. Some people politically just my ally. Some people who got a common goal are my co-conspirators. But white people need to be teaching white people. Because sometimes you only believe it when it's coming from somebody that looked like you. You know, black people are tired of the burden of having to be the caretakers of this country, holding your hand when you're young, putting our arm around you. You know, if we play sports and get paid a little money or rap and sing and dance, get paid a little money, somehow we're not supposed to speak to you. Like, what kind of foolishness is that? And then the same people will turn around and tell you the greatest president ever was a B-level actor named Ronald Reagan. We got a casino owner as the president of the United States right now. So you can't tell black people to keep taking care of me, understand me, give us time to progress. You need to be taught. You need to be taught by a teacher. This woman is an educator. She said we could eradicate racism in this country in 20 years if we really wanted to. If you look at it, that's pre-K through 12th grade is about 19 years. If you do your nursery and then mix it with your 12 years high school, you're going to go into roughly education 12, 13 years, maybe on up to 19 if you do college. If you educate all along the way, you can eradicate racism. But somebody still profits from racism. Police departments get paid more money when crime is up. So my brothers who won nonprofits in L.A. say when we really reduce crime, they take our funding. And then crime pop back up, and then we get a little more funding. And the police get more funding, too. So it's time to stop the Ponzi scheme. It's time to stop building private prisons. It's time to not, it's time that we have special prosecutors that come to places like Brunswick, Georgia, where the prosecutors and the whoever the guy who thought he was a policeman are so connected that he won't get prosecuted after hunting a black man like an animal with two more white men. It's time that we started appointing special prosecutors to come in from out of the district and prosecute. Black people just tired. We tired. How much do we have to do for you before you do something for yourself? Before you say, I'm going to self-educate myself, I'm going to listen to Jane Elliott. I'm going to listen to Tim Wine. I'm going to listen to old speeches by Eugene Debs. I'm going to read Ida B. Wells. I'm going to start to learn from Lucy Parsons. The last two people were black because they black women, and I believe that they should hold more leadership positions too.
But Killer Mike, you know America was founded on having somebody to look down on. That's what slavery provided. What we have. We got to have somebody. LBJ said, if you can convince the lowest white that he's as good as the best black, you can rob him. He said, hell, if you give him somebody to look down on, he'll empty his pockets for you. That's what will happen. We've been provided, they've been provided someone to look down on. Who do they look down on? Us and minorities. So you got to have somebody to look down on. If you're in racism, who are you going to look down on, Killer Mike?
Now, I remember having a conversation with Senator Bernie Sanders and him saying, Michael, you know, at the time, we were marching for workers' rights, or they were marching for workers' rights in Mississippi. And vehemently against it were poor white men who would have benefited from those rights and would have benefited from unions. And at the time that they were vehemently protesting against the black men, whose rights would have gotten everyone right? At the time, they were the lowest paid white workers in the nation. And back to what Skip said, back to what that wise man said, if you would have stood in solidarity together, it would have been better for everyone. But because you chose not to, you'll never break the stronghold of the NFL. And this country's like this. If we stand in solidarity together, that fair is fair. I may not agree with what you're saying or how you're saying, but I respect and I support your right to say it based on the First Amendment. I may not like how you feel about firearms, but I respect and support your right to own them according to the Second. I may want to see slavery gone for real. And if I really want that, I'm going to work to get the 13th Amendment changed. But what I have realized about this country is we talk the talk, but when it's time to walk the walk, everybody goes to sit back down. Mm. But it's time that we walk the walk all the way through now. It's time that we make sure that everyone can enjoy the constitutional rights that are promised so we can truly be the greatest nation on earth. Mm. Otherwise, we're still aspirational. You love LeBron. I love Kobe. Ain't nobody Jordan, though. Mm.
So, Michael, go deeper for us. About the message behind the words on your shirt right now.
Kill your masters. My master right now is sugar, so I'm working out and trying my best to beat it, right? So, you know, as our country tries to grow into the GOAT like Michael Jordan, I'm trying to grow into a slimmer Mike.
That.
But kill your masters is this. It's the principle of that we share the same master class. At the time that slavery existed, there was a planter class in the South, and the planter class helped promote that LBJ quote. They were 100 years before, but they helped promote the fact that if I can get the poorest white man to be a taskmaster, cracking a whip over a black man, I'll keep control over these blacks and poor whites. And what we have to understand is that we have the exact same masters. The same people that don't want to give you your rights for whatever your particular difference is have denied my rights for 400 years. The same people that would like to marginalize your neighborhood based on the fact they like to develop it 20 years later have done that to my neighborhood. If we do not share as allies a common ground to fight our masters united, we will continue to be dominated by them. And that's what people need to understand. And how arrogant. If any white person on the other side of this television thinks that this shirt is about them, please know that in America, man, money makes you a master. And I'm very comfortable as a rapper singing and dancing. You, as a working class white person, have a master. So don't be arrogant enough to think this shirt is about white people. I've never had a white master. I've grown up in a black city. All my heroes and villains have been black people. But if I had a politician that was acting as a master and doing wrong, then I voted for the other politician. If I had a job that broke up my union, then I fought like hell to get a union. no matter what my union members look like. That's killing your master. When dominant corporate stores are coming in, knocking out your local coffee shops, your local mom and pop shops, when you choose to support them, that's killing your master. As black people, if you shift one of your accounts to a black bank like Citizens Trust Bank in Atlanta or One United, you are killing your financial masters. We did a black bank thing. Me, T.I., Usher, a lot of brothers in Atlanta, Young Thug came out, rah-rah. We did a black banking challenge. That black banking challenge made Wells Fargo come out and allocate $60 million to black mortgages. Not minority mortgages, not people of color mortgages, black mortgages. That is killing your master.
Bro, Mike, we appreciate you coming on and dropping that knowledge on us, bro. We really appreciate it. Come back soon.
Love you, man.
Love and respect. Have a good morning.
But you dead wrong. You know good well, Bron the GOAT. Bron the GOAT.
Kobayashi.
Michael, thank you so much for your words. I can't talk for Shannon getting that last thing in there. And the list of everything you suggested we watch and read and listen to and learn, I'm going to make sure we get that list out there. So thank you for being a positive voice in this
movement. Thank you, Skip. I got to say thank you for that statement during those times, Skip. You'll never know what that meant.
God bless you, man. Thank you.
We appreciate it, Michael.
Love and respect. Y'all have a good morning.
I'll holler at the killer. No mercy.
Welcome back to Undisputed, Fox Sports NBA analyst Chris Broussard joining us now. Chris, we have missed seeing you in studio. I know you've been home in Jersey for the last couple months, and I just want to start by asking your reaction to the protests, to everything that has been happening all across the country over the last week.
Well, thanks, Jenny. It is great to be back. Great to see all you guys, and I definitely miss you. But I like everybody, I'm saddened by the destruction of the properties and the cities. The cities in America are burning, and that's very hard to watch. And I support the protesters without question, but I think it's gotten to a point where there are people of all races and all political stripes, and I even think people who are actually against the cause of African Americans and what we're fighting for, who are now looting and destroying these cities and these businesses, and they're using the death of George Floyd as an excuse to just wreak havoc and cause this destruction and steal merchandise. And that's very unfortunate that this is happening. But I will not sit here. I think it's cowardly if anyone condemns the protesters, even the violent ones, and yet they refuse or don't condemn the horrific acts and the lack of justice that has led to these protests. And that is, of course, whether it's Tamir Rice, Eric Garner, Philando Castile, John Crawford, all the way up to George Floyd, seeing these people on videotape, no less, murdered, and then the police who murdered them are either acquitted of their crimes or not charged at all. And that is what has led to this. And anyone condemning the looting and all of that, you must also condemn what has led to it. And that started it, so that should be condemned even in stronger terms. I also think people need to realize that the people who are looting and destroying these properties and breaking the law, and it is wrong, breaking the law, they are only following the example that they have seen set by many of these police officers all the way up to the highest levels. When you saw what happened with George Floyd, those were policemen who are paid to uphold the law, disregarding the law, disregarding it to the point where they could kill a man in broad daylight while they know they're being videotaped. They have such little regard for the law that they could do that. And then we saw in Georgia with Ahmaud Arbery, we know the police department there had the videotape for months, and they were going to let the killers go free. Where is their respect for the law? And only a month ago, and I don't even like typically going here, but only a month ago, month and a half ago, the president was encouraging protesters in Michigan, in Minnesota, in Virginia, to break the law, to protest against the stay-at-home orders, which was the law at that time. And when armed militias with assault weapons went to Michigan and other states and protested against the law, they were encouraged by the White House to do that. So my point is, when you see people at the highest levels, from the police department to the White House, who have no regard for the law, don't get mad at the people that have been pushed to the bottom rung of society, who are downtrodden, when they have no regard for the law. This is anarchy, unfortunately. Like I said, I hate seeing this. This is anarchy from the streets on up to the White House, from the hood to the White House. This is anarchy, and it's tough to watch.
It is, Chris. But George Floyd was probably what we call the straw that broke the camel back. Because if you go back in history, as you mentioned, there have been so many Walter Scotts and so many Athena Jefferson and so many that go unpunished. And we go back, Skip, even when citizens would kill black men in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, they would get an all-white jury. And they would be on in 10 minutes. They'd have the trial one day, and the jury would deliberate for 10 minutes. And then they go scot-free. And people are like, well, hold on, wait a minute. Where is our justice? You say justice. Justice is supposed to be blind. But we understand that when black people come up that step, Lady Justice is peeking out from under that blindfold. Like, okay, you black, oh, no, we going to hold you. They say justice is like shackles and cobwebs. They say it's like shackles for black or minority because you're held more accountable. They say for our white counterparts, it's like cobwebs. It's easily brushed aside. And so we're seeing that. And people can only take so much. I don't care how peaceful, how, you know, a man of faith, every man has a breaking point. And what we're seeing is that we're seeing year after year after year, police do this over and over again with no accountability. And then people are like, oh, hold on, wait a minute. If we don't do something, Skip, riot, America, you started this. You looted this land. How you think you got it? How you think you got in power? How do you think you became a superpower? This is peaceful now. You look, this is what we want you to do. Just hear what, no, you took it. And when they didn't listen, you bombed. You pillaged. You looted. So we just, black America just learned from the best. You've been firebombing us in the 60s, in the 50s to try to hold us in place, burning our churches, burning our homes. And now, as Malcolm X once said, the chickens have come home to roost, you're upset. You encourage this behavior. And then when it's turned on you, you're like, whoa, wait a minute. I can't believe you guys. You doing this in George Floyd's arm? No. George Floyd was the vehicle that finally pushed people over the edge to say, I've had enough, and I'm not going to take it anymore. So that's what this was about. As you said, Chris, I think the thing is that with black America, what we feel and the anger and the frustration, if you go back and check the history, as I spoke about it yesterday, Skip, 64 until today, every riot that black America has participated in was because of the killing of an unarmed black man. Period. Go back and look at it. From the 60s, 64, 65, on forward. It was because of that. And so what? And Skip, and we appreciate our white counterparts coming along with us. But if you notice, Skip, whites have never been had to protest or had to be at the forefront of a protest because there were never obstacles put in front of them. They always had rights, civil rights. They always had education. They always had housing. They always had voting. So they had, what were you going to protest? You want more of what you already got? That's why we protest. We protest to be heard. That's it. Go ahead, Skip.
So, Chris Broussard, now that we're seeing worldwide protests over George Floyd, we're seeing London and Paris and Berlin and on, that somehow this has seized the attention of the world, not just the black community in America. Can you see any good coming out of this as something positive that we can take away? Could this be a watershed moment in race relations?
Well, Skip, I saw you earlier in the segment before talking about how you're encouraged that, you know, you see so many whites involved in the protest. Mm-hmm. And I agree with you. That has been encouraging to see whites and non-blacks joining in this. I was saying to my wife last night, this kind of reminds me of how in the 1960s during the Civil Rights Movement, part of their strategy, Dr. King, Martin Luther King, and others, was to, as they marched nonviolently, they knew that the police were going to be violent with them. And they wanted the entire world to see how they were having dogs sicked on them. They were being beaten down by the cops. They were having water hoses and fire hoses shot at them. They knew that when people, white people, saw that, that they would be moved to action and try to change it. And I think that's what this was. It's very unfortunate. It's ridiculous that it had to take this. But for people to see what happened with George Floyd in broad daylight, I think a lot of white people saw it and were like, my goodness, this is just blatant disregard and blatant racism. And that has moved a lot of people to action. But what I'd say, Skip, is that people have to realize this is not just about George Floyd, and it's not even just about police brutality. This is about a system that economically and educationally and in terms of justice has put African Americans at the bottom. And those things need to be addressed too. I've talked about it. Look, people get upset. They got upset with affirmative action for blacks, you know, which we've had for what, 40, 50 years. White people have had 400 years of affirmative action. And I can go by with the very acts, the Homestead Act, the racist enforcement of the Social Security Act, the GI Bill, the Federal Housing Administration loans in the mid-20th century that created the white suburbs and made things better for them while they redlined the black neighborhood. And so there needs to be an intentional effort to uplift the masses of black people who are stuck in poverty and feel disenfranchised and hopeless. All of them aren't gonna be great athletes like Shannon Sharp, you know? And so there needs to be that type of undertaking and that people, for us to have a big change in this country. Hopefully this leads to it, because I have heard governors mention, look, this has been going on for decades. This goes back to slavery. They're not, I've heard some not just make it an isolated incident and understand this is a pattern of how African Americans have been treated since we've been in this country. And so that's what it's going to take to make a lasting effort. Right now, everybody's emotional, everybody's, you know, engaged, but it's going to take the hard work of changing laws to really right this situation.
You're exactly right, Chris. As Dr. King said, We ask a bootless man to pull himself up by his bootstraps. You see, whether when the slaves were freed, he was free. And Dr. King said he's freed to what? You gave him no land. You gave him nothing. So to famine. So it wasn't like the Irish. Okay, if you go west, whatever you settle upon, you could have. What do we get? Oh, you can be a sharecropper. You can stay here. You won't make any money, but you'll have a tin roof and wooden floors. So you can somewhere you can stay, but you got to work for me for nothing, huh? And then when you were needing money, guess what? You had to stay, and then your kids was born into that, and their kids was born into that. No, so you talk. I agree with you 1,000%, Chris. They've had a 400-year head start, and they expect us to catch up because what they do, Skip? Well, you got Michael Jordan. You had a black president for 8 years, huh? That's only us. We're allowed to get one or two, three successful, and that's supposed to make up for the 45 million of them. Well, that's enough. I mean, you had a black president, you got Oprah, you got Michael Jordan, you got LeBron. I mean, what else you need? Really? We need an opportunity to acquire wealth and have generational wealth, like the gap that's been provided to them before we even got started in the race.
So, Chris, go one other direction with this. Colin Kaepernick obviously started a lot of this with a very peaceful protest, taking a knee. Shannon has made the incredibly painfully ironic point. That's exactly what that white cop did, take a knee on George Floyd's neck for 8 minutes and 46 seconds. But it started with Colin taking a knee, actually sitting for the national anthem. And now we've come full circle to a Colin Kaepernick who has changed his stance. It's no longer peaceful from Colin. He has tweeted at the end of last week, it's time for rebellion. It's time for retaliation. Are you okay with that new stance and that new message from Colin Kaepernick?
No, because it's, look, African-Americans are 13% of the population. African-Americans don't control the economy. They don't control the educational system. They don't control the judicial system. And they certainly don't control the weapons. I mean, an armed, if he's calling for a violent rebellion, it's not going to work. So, look, I support Colin. I agreed with him from day one. And I think he's been proven right. But that is not the right message to send. We need to fight for sure. But we need to fight smartly and in a way that we can win and get what we want at the end. So I think Colin Kaepernick's been justified to a large degree, and he did start peacefully. But we are not in position in this country to have a war of blacks against whites and win it. And Colin should know that.
Well, I think it means we another way we can fight back at the ballot box. We can do that. And I think sometimes we far too many times where my vote doesn't count, where every vote counts. And that's what happened last time. That's how we got this guy in the White House. Well, I'm not going to vote because it doesn't matter anyway. And lo and behold, you saw what happened. But you can vote at the local level. You can put DAs. You can put county commissioners. You can put state representatives, state senators in position. You know, hey, that's what they do. What have they done? You look at it, they got 200 lifetime judges. So if something happens at the local level, they're going to appeal it. It's going to go to one of their judges, and it's going to get tossed. That's how they do. That's how we got to start thinking, Chris. We don't necessarily mean have to pick up weapons, but we got to fight with our minds and says, okay, this is how we're going to do it. We're going to put people in position that's going to have our best interest in mind as they've done. They've gotten really good at that. While we're talking about, you know, all this other stuff that's going on, they're throwing rocks over here, but the real issue is in the bush over there. They're appointing these judges to lifetime, some of them 35, 36 years of age. They got real smart on us on that one.
No mercy.
Welcome back to Undisputed. Fox College football analyst Reggie Bush is now joining the show. Reggie, it's good to see your face. It's been way too long since we've seen you in person. We're doing okay. We're doing okay. And I do want to start by asking you just about everything that's taking place all across the country. I saw you posted a pic on social media at a protest in L.A. I'd love to know what that experience was like and just how you're feeling about everything happening all across the country.
It was something I'll never forget. It's something that me and my wife have never experienced in our lives. You know, when we walked on to Melrose and Fairfax, we were in a war zone, and I've never experienced anything quite like it. It was like walking through a movie. I almost felt like I was, you know, walking through, you know, some action-packed movie, and we were just kind of, you know, extras in this movie, because on one block, you would see burning buildings, fire trucks surrounded by police officers. Then literally the next block, you see busted out windows, people running in and out of stores, and so on for the next couple blocks. And when you walk through something like that, it's something that you'll never forget. And it's unfortunate because I think the looting and the rioting is overshadowing George Floyd's death, the real reason why we're here. And it's unfortunate because people get labeled as thugs, they get labeled as all kinds of things. And to me, I think that's a scapegoat because at the end of the day, even those people who are looting, even though it's wrong, and I'm not saying it's right, it's wrong. And I don't think it's that's the way to get to where we want to get to. But those people are still affected by the police department in some way, shape, or form. And that's the issue that we have right now, is the disconnect between the people and the police department. And even, you know, down to some of the things that are being said by the police chief from L.A., kind of putting the blame on the people, or, you know, other various leaders who are coming out and being vocal and maybe saying things that are just igniting, you know, these protests and these riots and the looting.
Yeah, I'm very confused by what the LAPD police chief said. Like, the blood of George Floyd is on the protesters' hand. Like, hold on, wait a minute. That happened ex post facto. So one of your own men of your color, of your department, not your department per se, but under that umbrella, the police, they killed this man. So how is that blood on the protesters' hand? I didn't get that. I think, Reggie, is that when you get so frustrated and you see years and years and years of nothing being done, when police kill unarmed black men and women and nothing gets done, and we saw this live. You know, if you go back and when Dr. King took that step on Bloody Sunday on the Edmund Pettus Bridge, that was the 6 o'clock evening news. Everybody sat down to watch the 6 o'clock evening news. When they saw what this officer did to George Floyd, Skip, it was almost the same thing. You get an opportunity to see a man die on live television as he's begging, pleading for his life. He's calling out for his dead mother. His mom passed 2 years ago, Skip, and that's who he called, knowing that she's dead. Mom, what can she do? Knowing. And my stomach hurt. My I can't breathe. You're going to kill me. And he does not unrelent. 3 minutes, he's unconscious, and you keep it there. Really? And so people like, hold on, wait a minute, enough is enough. We've seen too many Walter Scotts. We've seen too many Trayvon Martin. We've seen too many black men and women unarmed die at the hands of the police with no ramifications, no changes in how they do business. Where do we draw the line? Yep. And normally when people get fed up, I don't care who it is, Skip, you think about it. When you think, we're like, when America, we go someplace, and they might, we might think we're doing right, but eventually, people get tired of you being there, and they will turn on you even though you helped them, like, enough is enough, get out. Well, even though the police say, well, we're trying to help the community, not at what you're doing more harm than good. Get out. And so this has been the culmination. We've seen this for 400 years. We feel we've been underserved and over-policed. So this is like, okay, we don't have a choice. You don't hear. And we just want to be heard. And this, what we're seeing, Reggie, when you see guys, when you see people, and it's not all of them, but when you see them burn buildings and loot, it seems to me that's the only thing that they care about. They care about possessions. Mm-hmm. They care about artifacts, things that can be replaced. But a life can't be brought back. This is, oh, so it bang, busts out of the window. Oh, you hear that? Okay, we have buildings on fire. Oh, you see that? Now will you listen to us? That's the only way they feel that they can get your attention, because they've tried to sit down and say, okay, look, this is what's going on in our community, and we don't think it's fair. But you turn a deaf ear and they blind out of that, so they start burning down and tearing up stuff to get your undivided attention.
So, Reggie Bush, please share this with us, if you would. You came from a very different background, very different upbringing than Shannon Sharp did in rural South Georgia. You're San Diego area, USC here in L.A. for college. Tell us, what was your interaction with white teammates, white schoolmates as you came up through school in the San Diego area? What was your, did it help your sort of comfort level with white people the way you were raised in San Diego?
Oh, wow, that's a great question. Did it help my comfort level? No, not really. Just because, you know, there are a number of things that happen, you know, and it doesn't really matter where you come from, because there's racism everywhere. And that's the thing. Racism, you know, racism can happen in very expensive neighborhoods, and racism obviously happens in the poor neighborhoods as well. And so, you know, for me, I've had those kinds of experiences with people, you know, all over the place. And so it didn't make me more comfortable around people of other color, but I understood what it was. And I got it at a very early age, because I saw it in football. So I saw it when we would go and play in certain cities where we would experience racism because of, you know, certain areas in San Diego are predominantly more known as more racist than other areas. So, you know, I definitely had those experiences, but it didn't change or wasn't, you know, and again, I don't come from the deep South like Sharp does, but when I got drafted to New Orleans and when we had a training camp in Mississippi, you quickly learn about the deep South and how some of those ways and things that happened down there.
Skip, for me, some of the best people that I've ever met in my life have been white. I worked for a man named Joe Tatum, and I remember, Skip, my aunt was supposed to come back and pick me up and take me to 4-H and take me to, I was going to 4-H camp, but she didn't show up. So I called Mr. Joe's wife, Joe Tatum. He passed away recently, and his wife passed away. And I called Miss Joanne. I said, Miss Joanne, my aunt was supposed to come pick me up and take me to 4-H and take me to catch the bus to 4-H camp and bring me money. Skip, she hung the phone up. She came, gave me $25, took me to 4-H camp when we needed money for school stuff. My grandmother would go borrow money from Mr. Joe and say, Joe, them boys will pay you back once the summer comes. Now, this was, you know, in the winter. Them boys will pay you back. So I've had people that's been good to me. And I don't judge a race by bad people. But I've seen enough of systemic racism in the police department that says I know something's not right. I judge each man, each woman on his or her merits. I don't stereotype or generalize a race or a group because of this. And see, I think that's what happens to us. One black person robbed, well, all black people are thieves. One black person does something, well, all black people do this. We're the only race. I feel bad. Anytime I see my race do anything, Reggie, I cringe. Because, and that's the way I feel. But I don't think enough white people cringe when they see other whites do wrong. They're like, that's not me. So ain't no skin off my back. I look at it differently, Skip. I'm in a store, Skip, and guys like, he didn't have enough money. They didn't have enough money to pay for it. And it's like, well, bro, don't worry about it. I said, ma'am, I'll take care of it. Just go ahead and let them have that. I'll pay for it. Because I don't want to cause a scene. I don't want anything to happen. Because then they look at all of us. I'm black. They don't like, oh, you black. You just like them probably. You probably going to want something for nothing also. So, Skip, that's the way I look at it. All white people are not bad. But if you see other white people doing something bad and you won't speak out against it, you're just as evil as they are. You're complicit in the act.
Accessory. It's called accessory.
Yes.
So, Reggie, after all you've seen and heard over the last 48 hours, do you think any good is going to come out of the murder of George Floyd?
I think it can. And I think with regards to the protests, you know, I think, listen, I don't think it's hard. If the police would just march with the people, right? The same way that Chris Swanson did in Detroit, in Michigan, where he literally laid down, you know, and marched with the people. That's what they want. They don't want to be looting. They don't want to be, you know, rioting. They don't want to get shot in the face with rubber bullets and you know, being hit with batons. They want peaceful protests. And that's the thing I want people to understand. There are more people doing good in these protests than there are people looting and breaking into things, because that gets overshadowed by the media for, you know, for the large amount of people who are really actually even holding back some of these people. I've seen some people putting their lives on the line to save some businesses, and that's who we are, right? That's who we are as a country. But unfortunately, people love to see the negative, and they feed off of it, you know, in this day and age. And, you know, this is the only thing that you kind of see sometimes on social media, and I hate it because I was there and I saw how many people were doing good.
And you see sometimes when people are being destructive, they will actually stop them, hold them for the police to come. But Reggie, you said something very interesting. They want the police to acknowledge that what's going on is not right. And by you marching with us, you're saying, okay, we agree that it's not right and we're willing to make changes. But when you stand there and you still do see some of the things that they're doing, Skip, even on live TV, I see them shooting at people. They arrest the black guy on live television, say, where are your credentials? He said, here are my credentials right here. I'm with CNN. We still got to, what? He's telling you, he's showing you who you are. They're shooting at on air, they're on camera, and they're shooting at them still. So it's like some of them still don't get it, Skip, and that's what's frustrating. Some still don't get it.
Reggie, we appreciate you being here and sharing your thoughts and your experience with that protest. No mercy.